Good evening. My name is Norm Tice, and we are to have a discussion this evening under the heading of singles. The church, and perhaps especially and particularly now, Holden. Is Holden Village a place for singles? To what extent are persons who are not married comfortable and included? To what extent, perhaps, are singles excluded because they are not in families? You come to the dining hall, and you come to sit down, and somebody tells you, "Oh, that's saved for my wife or my child," you know, and you'll have to go somewhere else. So you look around, and I've heard single people say that it can get to be a lonely thing finding somebody to sit with at the dinner table when you're constantly told that seats are being saved for family. By way of introduction, in my parish in Washington, D.C., I was told by one young lady, not so terribly young, I would say she's probably in her 30s, and a professional woman, when I asked her, what could we do for singles? And she said, anything you want, as long as you don't call it singles. So that there is somewhat of a feeling of stigma attached, I think, to the title of singles, or singles don't want to be singled out, perhaps. We have taken the approach in my congregation of not having a singles group, but trying very hard to include singles in the structure of the congregation, not so much trying to form social groups, but make them part of the boards and committees and being sure that they're integrated into the parish in every way. And to some extent, that's been successful. I think there are failures along the way also. The neighboring Presbyterian pastor has told me that he has to be very careful in his parish that he does not simply program for families, for couples, because it's very easy in that setting for him to ignore the singles, which form a large percentage of his people. So I am not single. And I would like to hear from you, and I have a hunch that the Holden people would like to hear, and maybe your church back home would like to hear, how you're faring if you are single in that milieu. Are your needs being met? Are you considered somewhat of a half a person, or less than to be taken seriously because you're single? Does anyone want to reflect on that? Now, I don't know that you're all single. We invited everybody. Holly.
Well, I'd like to start by saying that, I don't know, it was a couple of years ago, it was the first time I heard that singles were discriminated against. And I heard a rather interesting thing that singles after a certain age, I guess, were considered to be irresponsible and frivolous and not very trustworthy, and I don't know what all, because, you know, singles had not managed to get married by then and settle down. I had never heard that before, but somebody was doing a seminar on it. And the other thing is just my own personal experience in my church is I haven't felt like anything at all that I was ever stopped or blocked from doing anything I wanted. When you talk about making sure singles get on boards and committees and so on, I mean, that's something I can't imagine having to work at getting people to do that just because they're single. I mean, in our church, at least, there certainly wouldn't be any limitations on it.
Okay. It's good to hear.
There's a lot of different categories of single people. What category are you talking about?
Any single category you wish to talk about.
Single, never married, single, separated or divorced, single, lost his
title. Well, I suppose the category is over against married.
So
people who are married or for in families.
Age, any, there are about several different states of singleness.
Sure.
And lots of different ages.
Right. All of the above.
But
But the experience of being single can really be shaped by which category one finds
oneself. Yeah, that's what I mean.
I mean, when you're recently divorced, it feels a certain way to be the only, you suddenly notice that, I suddenly noticed that I wasn't the only, you know, I was the only person who wasn't with someone, which I hadn't noticed before.
How did that make you
and
feel?
And I'm sure that, you know, I'm sure there are other people who have different kinds of experiences who do just fine without a mate or who, you know.
Would you mind telling us how that made you feel? You said you suddenly noticed that you were not with someone and that you were different.
Oh, I felt terrible after my divorce, I mean, which was about 5 years ago. But I think I was wondering about this group. When I was in kind of the worst down stage of that process, I was a graduate student. I was really searching, you know, for some kind of help and community. New, you know, had decided to leave my congregation and had gone to a Wyatt moved actually, and was a graduate student and went to an early morning communion service, kind of looking for help and people and so on. And the pastor asked me to read the Old Testament lesson for the day, and without knowing who I was or anything, I just showed up. And it was Genesis 2 or something. therefore you shall cleave and, you know, become one flesh and all that. And, well, this was just, I said, I can't do it. Mm-hmm. You know, and kind of gave out very clear signals that he had better help me somehow, which he did. But then shortly thereafter, kind of left the church for a while in anger at all of those images and so on. And in fact, went around to all the people I knew and said, I'm leaving the church. And about 6 months later, you know, came back and have been much more involved in the church ever since. But I think that message that you better be married came through very clearly to me at that point in my life, and felt really crummy. You know, felt really crummy. And I, you know, I think I'm not the only person that I know who's had that experience.
Okay.
I think it makes a difference too if you're always been single or if you recently will. That's accepted differently than divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you kind of have a big D on your forehead, you know. It's really different. I switched congregations and was accepted there because I hadn't gone through, you know, the separation and divorce while I was a member of the congregation. And that's worked out real good. But I think it's really hard to stay in the same congregation and go through that.
There's so many identities attached.
And people will show empathy. I think as long as you're still going through the separation, and when they know you're serious about the divorce, then it's different. And their views kind of change.
How do you perceive their views changing?
It's kind of like. Well, I noticed it more in a certain age group. The older people, and then the church I belonged to was more older women. I felt, you know, they were much more accepting because they'd gone through a lot of stuff on their own just through their life. It was almost like it was a threat to them. Say to the 30 to 45 age group, making them maybe look at some of their stuff.
A little too close to home?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. What would you have liked them to do?
Just been supportive. And not take sides. And I think you'll probably accept accept me as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm finding, and this is, I belong to a group in the city in Minneapolis, and it's called Community. And it's headed up by, it's ALC, LC, and AELC, and Oxford College that are doing this program. And so once a month we meet and discuss issues like this. And it comes down to people accepting people. Until the church accepts everyone, you can't break it down into singles, the gay, lesbian group, so on and so on. I know families who, because they don't have the right clothes, aren't accepted into the church. You know, they don't feel comfortable, so they choose not to come. And I think it's just real important for people to accept people and not to judge, because they don't know what's happened.
Okay. That's a clear message. Anybody would want to respond to that or tie into that?
I guess I just keep struggling with how the church can be more like that. You know, is it that our churches have become too big? Is it that we've become too formal? Is it, how can we move into the, you know, being once again a circle of people who simply care for one another as the body of Christ? You know, I just finished seminary, and I hear those kinds of pleas, and it just hurts inside of me, you know, that the church especially ends up being the enemy in some cases as far as a non-accepting community rather than a loving community. And I just wish I could, you know how we can help encourage that instead of...
Yes, I'm not sure I have the answer to that, but I'm Lutheran, and I go to a Lutheran church for a service, and then I go to this Catholic church and a later service. Because of the love that flows through that church, I can't explain what it is.
The what church?
It's a Catholic church in Minneapolis that is just so accepting. But one thing they do is they speak out on the peace issues, they speak out on everything. You know, they don't just draw back and not take risks. They're a very risk-taking church. And maybe that's what we have to start doing is, as a church body, start taking risks and start living with the things that we talk about.
Leonard.
I got the same problem you have. I'm Norwegian Lutheran from Minnesota. Said you're sweet, I'll tolerate that. Living in Portland, Oregon now, I go to the Catholic Charismatic Evening Prayers every Thursday night. Well, that's just something. I surely understand what you're saying, and I am very grateful to the Lutheran Seminary student upstairs here someplace who said that, hey, what a horrible message I'm hearing. Thanks for sharing that with us.
Well, I could add too, I was divorced, my first marriage and then divorced 15 years ago. I was almost longer than that. I was married 15 years. Probably 20 years ago. And when I was first divorced in the Catholic Church, I felt not ostracized, but alone. Except for my family, I felt so alone. My friends, I thought, were my friends. They weren't really. I was kind of ignored, or I felt like I was. But thinking back now, maybe it was my own feelings. I didn't put myself out any because I thought they were all looking down on me because I was divorced. And probably it was my own feelings that made me stay away from them. So I'd kind of hide in a house with my children. If I had put myself out a little more, I would have been a little happier. And it took a long time for me to get over that feeling. But now, in our church, they have formed a group for the singles, the divorce, and they get together, meet together, and talk with each other, and sympathize and help each other, and it's helped a lot of them. I wish they had that when I was going through this.
That, oh, go ahead.
I say, I've kind of, things I've noticed just here at Holden, that although there's a lot of people, a lot of times I see many people who are very lonely. And I've gone through different periods of feelings here. And I find that although there's a lot of people, because of the transitory nature of this place, people aren't always afraid to let themselves be known. And kind of what you're saying, maybe it's you sometimes that isn't letting yourself, out. Mm-hmm. And once I finally noticed that, I started to try to make, specific actions to show, trying to spread out a little bit more. That's a very hard thing to do, though. It would be nice if there was a way for, the support group at the church sounds like that would be one way of dealing with it. Because I'm just amazed at how many times you can feel a whole crowd of people, but still you can often feel so alone.
I've heard double messages on that. It's the remark I made at the beginning. Shall we have a singles group? Of course, now maybe it's different to say singles group and say a group of divorced people. That might come off as more of a support group, and a singles group might come off more as a social, that kind of thing. But you're saying you want that. Is the impression, is that a general impression that you would like to meet specifically as singles? Or as divorced, or as widowed, or,
In our congregation, we had a group of women who were widowed. Some were divorced, and some were never married. And it was a koinonia group. The other koinonia groups in the congregation were couples. We were a wonderful support group and really ministered to one another. But the pastor did not like to see us as a singles group. And would rather have seen that split up and go into groups with other couples.
Did he give any reasons?
I never knew the reasons, no.
How did you perceive his antipathy to that? I mean, how did you pick it up?
We were told that.
Okay.
We were told that. And it happened then that I left for the year at Holden, and the group simply fell apart and never was reorganized.
Okay. So you're for that, and you would say it can be an all-encompassing thing. It can encompass all the categories of singledom, huh?
Mm-hmm. And it was very helpful because some of the women were retired, some were professional women, and we were a good support group for one another.
It was single women.
Yes,
that was the category.
To be all women. Mm-hmm. And if you talk about single men in the church, that's probably a non-existent or nearly non-existent group.
Mm-hmm. In that church, okay.
In all churches.
Well, it's not in mine, but...
Are there any single men in this room? Mm-hmm. Either
might
well
be some
single
men.
Women career persons who are choosing to remain single or remain single longer. And I think in that group of people, you find that they tend to be very independent and are very used to being alone and have chosen that because they have something else that they wish to devote their time to. Whereas when you get to a divorced person or a widowed person, it's not necessarily choice. And it's not what they're used to, and it's much more difficult for the persons who have been married and been divorced or widowed as it is for a person who has remain single for other reasons. So I do think that there's a different need sometimes for different kinds of single people.
I would say there's a different need, but I can see where if all of those different people were together at a support session or whatever, I can see where, although you have different needs, each, the ways the different people deal with it, with their situation, could help the other groups.
Well, I agree, but what I'm saying is that maybe single women are the ones who are objecting, single women by choice are objecting to the singles kind of group, whereas the others maybe are more in need and looking more for something in that line. Certain messages.
Yeah, presumably if you're single by choice, the element of choice is there,
right,
that you don't necessarily need support,
right,
for that. You're feeling very strong and independent about it. The support is not.
Basically, they're more outgoing and have done more things like this and are not so much looking for support.
Yeah.
I can kind of see that point because I don't know where I'm going at the moment. You know, I have not been single for the 1 month and 5 days. My husband died. And it's something that has just been thrown, you know, upon me. And I don't know which way to go. You know, I don't know how I feel. And when people at our church, you know, were really sympathetic and whatnot, and helpful and whatnot. And I can already feel, not really a forcing out, but a, well, now what are you going to do? You know, because our friends and whatnot, I mean, they get together and whatnot, and now my family isn't invited.
And it changes
a thing. And one of the wives said, well, you can call our husbands and ask to come and help you with something, but you can't have our husbands. And I thought, I don't want to have our husbands. Yeah, she really did. Yeah, and, you know, I thought, now, if that's what people are going to start thinking, that I want someone else's husband, that isn't what I want. I just want to be part of something, you know. And it's really hard being lonely anyway, you know. And it's, you know, it's been so long since I've been alone that, it, you know, it's...
Are there any...
I don't know where to turn, exactly, you know.
Are there any persons that you know in your church or in your community who are also widowed in the recent past?
No, but I have a good friend here.
I think you do your church and your pastor and the leadership of your church a real favor if you let them in on how you're feeling about how you're being accepted.
I've talked to the pastor quite a bit. I don't know how he's perceiving all this. Because I don't know how to feel yet, one way or the other. You know, whether I feel being left out or if I feel what. You know, I'm not sure what to do with myself, let alone what to, you know, to expect from other people.
Anybody who's been through that want to comment? Yeah, please.
Well, I'm from the same congregation as Rita is, and I, within this past year, have been divorced. So there are some similarities, some great differences, too. And I find that I'm very welcome to serve on the boards and committees. And in fact, now, supposedly, I have far more time. And I can do even more than I ever did before. And I guess I don't resent that, except I don't agree with it necessarily, but our congregation, at least our leadership of our congregation, as far as the pastoral leadership, does feel that there is a need for something to be done, and that's one reason why we're here tonight. I agree. I find that I'm getting more support from organizations like Parents Without Partners in some of their discussion work, which is outside of the church, and is really too bad because I know there are lots of people within our congregation that are just like I am. And a comment that came from a Presbyterian church, a large Presbyterian church in Seattle, This lady was recently widowed, and she joined a adult Bible study group that met on Sunday mornings. And then, because she was part of the staff of that church, she happened to be in a committee meeting with the leader of that Bible study group, who said, "You know, I really don't like what's happened to my Bible study group since all those singles have joined." And he said, "We used to be able to do all kinds of things besides the Bible study. We used to be able to go out for dinner. We used to be able to do all this. And now I have all these people within my group." And, you know, divorced people particularly, most of us are poor. I mean, everything has been cut in half. And many times you have the children and so on. And see, the idea of poverty now was cramping their style. And he publicly, was saying this, and probably unaware that she was really, you know, sitting there as being part of that group. And of course she spoke up. But they're struggling with this very real negative attitudes towards this. And I don't know if it's a negative attitude as much as not being aware to the needs and to the crying hurts that are there. Just being blind to them.
You ask if people want a singles group, you know, what they need. I was divorced about 10 years ago, and at that time I didn't know anyone else that had ever been divorced or was, or that it was even, I thought it was so totally unacceptable that, you know, I didn't know there was such a thing, I guess. Very naive, I understand now, but anyway, I would have loved a support group. I didn't have that. It would have been really nice. I didn't know enough at that time to even know there was such a thing. But the other thing I wanted just as much was I wanted the friendship of all people. And I had some very good and kind friends, you know, who were also married, who had been former couple friends, who remained my friends. But there was a very, very obvious, I had a next door neighbor who would, you know, we would go out for coffee, and she was really good support. But if I happened to be in her home and her husband came home, she would say, "Well, it's been really nice having you, you know, I'll see you tomorrow." And I was to leave. And it was so ridiculous. I felt just like the lady down here. I no more wanted anything to do with her husband other than I would have enjoyed talking to him for a minute. I really enjoy male conversation. And it took 1 year before I was invited out by a couple. And that was 12 months of wanting to talk to people, not just women friends. And it was an assistant pastor at our church, an intern, and his wife, and they invited me to a church concert. And I still remember that as one of the highlights of my life, you know, going to a concert with a man and a woman, and sitting on the way, stopping in a restaurant, and sitting with them and eating dinner, you know, with a man and a woman. It was just beautiful. And no thoughts of, you know, I wanted her husband or any ridiculous. It was just nice to be out in the world again. And I had hoped things had changed in 10 years. Is it really still that same? I'm kind of surprised to find that out. I thought it was
better. Any single woman in the church is always considered a threat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I find that, you know, not even, most of my friends aren't married, but, and so I understand that the relationships are much more unstable, but I find it's very frustrating to be with a man and a woman and find that since we all happen to be single, it's very threatening. If I'm not that, you know, I'm not part of that couple, and the other female is thinking, you know, what if she's trying to get at him, you know? And I have such an interest in friendships. I'm not interested in you know, those other things. I have a male friend of mine, and I don't think that just because I have a male friend that I have to broadcast that to every single person. And I find that just very, very frustrating to think that it's like, can't you just deal with me as a person and forget about all the other aspects?
Part of what you said struck me, that when you were married, you didn't realize I mean, you didn't understand divorced people, and maybe part of it, there needs to be more communication between, I mean, the divorced people shouldn't be in a separate little group. They should be someplace where married couples can interact with them and become more informed, possibly.
I think that's really true. Just in the church that I go to, family is stressed so much, and it's a beautiful church. They're beautiful, beautiful people, and the pastor believes, you know, very much in the family as a unit, and I do too, and I think it's great. But the singles part of our church, you know, there's very, very few singles, and so I feel, you know, very often excluded, and it's not that I necessarily want a singles group to participate in, because I have a lot of single friends, but there's times when I'd like to be included with those families, and I feel pushed away. I feel excluded, and I don't think it's intentional. I think that a lot of those people simply don't understand because they haven't been single, you know, for a very long period of time. They're all married, and they just don't understand. I don't know how to deal with that.
I'd like to get back to Rita over here and ask whether anybody understands what she's saying from the inside.
I do. I was divorced, but I can understand how she feels.
I mean, it's 1 month old. It's pretty recent. Have any of you lost a spouse by death? Yeah? You know what she means.
I lost my husband almost a year ago. But I was so well received, of course, by the people in the congregation that I couldn't identify with that, because I thought both husbands and wives were equally as thoughtful and considerate of my needs. So I felt I had many friends among both the women and men. We were in Anchorage, Alaska then, and maybe it's different up there because they're so far removed from other relatives, you know, they just reach out and love.
Maybe the common thread in all kinds of singleness is just the effort it takes to have somebody. I mean, I'm 35, I've never been married, and I've gotten very practiced at getting what I need in the way of emotional support. I get a little bit here and some there, and different kinds from different people, and I feel really graced that I've learned that, because I didn't know it for many years. But it's still an effort. I mean, I may do it more easily than a lot of people here, but it's still an effort. The idea of, I'm finding it holding, it's not bothering me that much, walking in wondering who I'm going to eat with, because there's so many people here that I'd be happy as anything to sit down and talk to them, get to know them, even if it's people I don't know yet. But there's still just a little tiny hesitation as you sit down and you see an unfamiliar face and you think, oh, I've got to ask them what their name is.
And you got to remember.
And I think that's the one thing that gets to me, being single every now and then. The trouble with being a single female or male, there aren't as many single men in the church, that's for sure, as there are women. So that's more common problem. That's a problem, but I think the main thing is the effort, that there's just not somebody that's there in a good mood, in a bad mood, close to you, far away from you, but they're the person that sits down next to you and you don't have to think about it. And you've got somebody that if you really need to have a hug, you know you can go to that person, or pretty much so, and say, hey, look, even if we're fighting now, let's take a break. I need something. I think there's some aspects of that that you find in it.
Yeah. I identify with that in this sense, that I know that when I go to a new place, I'd much rather have Judy with me, because then I can always hide. I hate to go to wedding receptions. When I do the wedding, and she doesn't come along, and there's 99% of these people I don't know, and I think, oh, here I sit, pie in one hand, coffee in the other, to talk to strangers who I will never see again.
Yeah.
You know, it's, yeah, for me that's a real burden.
I think that's how I feel right now, because it's been so long since I have had, I've always had my husband to either hide behind or be with, or whatever you want to call it, you know, and now all of a sudden I have to face the world alone, you know, and face people alone. And we can't, we just got up here today, and when I first got here, I don't know, my whole insides just started shaking, and I just feel so sick, you know, because we were here as a family 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, okay, you know, God, you've got to help me with this, because if it was up to me, I could just stay in my room and hide this whole time. I have to go out and keep my head up and face people and say hello to strangers and whatnot, and, you know, and care about other people too. And that's really hard. It's really hard for me to do, because I guess I've never been an outgoing person anyway. And I haven't, you know,
I'd say you have a lot of courage.
Yes.
Telling us about it.
I was going to say, I think you've made a great start.
I'd like to say, I think you're doing beautifully for that short of a time. I think I hid for 3 months before I even told my neighbor who lived next door to me. So, I mean, I think that's remarkable. It's not easy.
If it's any comfort to you, everybody does that around here when they think about all those names they're going to have. I think I'll just hide in my room.
There's part of the gift of singleness, and something that's really to be celebrated in some of what we're saying, which is the moments when people don't hide, which is what, as Christians, we say we're supposed to be about. Anyway, and I certainly experienced a lot of times at, you know, during my years of singleness when, wow, I'm really, because I don't know what's going to happen, because I don't know where to hide, I'm more available to the newness that's around. And it can be very intense and exciting, you know, at times. And that's something that I hope not to lose completely as a now married person again. That is a real joy and a real alive place to be once in a while.
When you talk about affirming singleness, this is something that I'd really like to start seeing done in the church from the pastors, is to, from the pulpit, affirm singleness. Affirm people. Even if I ever choose to be married, I hope always to be a single person. I am an individual. And I think that needs to be affirmed.
Very much.
And I hope pastors will start doing that. And I guess this church I was talking about before, that is done. And I think it's real important. You know, it's, I know I've worked on becoming, and this is kind of a cliche, a little person, and it's taken work and pain and a lot of struggling, and I don't ever want to lose that. And because of this, I know that in a future marriage, if I would have one, but what is important to me, and it's like this. There's a very good book, it's called How to Survive the Loss of a Love. And it talks about two holes, or two halves make a whole, the two holes make a complete love. And I think that's what we really are, you know, a lot of single people strive for, to be very much an individual. And I hope that that starts becoming affirmed in the church. That because I'm not part of a couple, I'm not a whole person.
Probably think it needs to, well, you said it needs to be strived for in marriages too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
As a former divorced person, I happened to run across a close friend of mine that he was through a lot of problems besides losing his farm, and I was farming at the time. So I kind of took him in hand and just kind of helped him out and made a personal commitment to myself to boost him up through his trials and all this type of thing. As a result, he really came out of his feeling. He gave back, and at this point, it's been very successful. I guess what I'm saying is I'm looking maybe the person-to-person thing or the couple-to-person coordination with a particular problem should be implemented in a group situation, if this could be implemented. I know I'm getting quite complex, but that personal counseling or friendship or whatever have you, it could even be a couple with a person, I think is very necessary. It's a support. And then you also need a group when it's needed.
How does a community support that, such as a church?
It's got to be through some sort of we're trying to set up something like this, and it's really bombing out.
Is it always programmatic? You know, you set up a group, or you set
Well, we're
a
trying to avoid that, but, you know, I've been through the problems, and I don't know how to deal with it. We're trying, and I guess we're ending up on a couple bases to start with, because that's the only place we're getting reception to start with, and then maybe we can start pulling individual singles upon, I guess, knowledge of who they are. And that's where our real problem is. We don't even know who are the singles at this point in our church, really.
One of my very strong impressions of the church where I'm serving now in Washington, and I think some of it is characteristic of the transiency as well as the transplantedness of people in Washington, they all came from somewhere else, is that people come, they're looking for friends, for friendship. Now that isn't untheological and it's not wrong or anything like that, but that's the frustration is that that's something that really can't be programmed. You can start clubs, but then when you start doing that, that doesn't quite do it. What people want is a sense, I guess you would describe as being over at somebody's home and being received. And I find it very difficult to get on the phone and say, hey, how about inviting so-and-so over to your house? I'm not quite ready to do that.
Our church has done that kind of thing.
Yeah.
They have, we set up, what was that called? I don't know what the name of it was, but we were given, as new people joined the church, certain people within the church were given their names. Mm-hmm. And then it was really pretty much up to you. And, you know, singles, I think this would be, I don't see why a couple couldn't be their friend, you know, as well as a single. I don't think they want all single friends. It's nice to have couples as your friends. And so either way, if you're a single or a couple, you could reach out in that way. And I know we were assigned the name of a young family that moved to our town. And it was very awkward, you're right. I mean, we knocked on their door and said, hi, we're from our Redeemer's Church and we're, you know, here to be your friend. It was just really awkward. And it was just the strangest evening. We went back a couple of weeks later, and now I'd say, after about 2 years, we're really good friends, and they have met many of our friends, and now, in fact, in the last 6 months, we've kind of dropped back, because they have found younger friends now that, you know, and it's been good. So I don't see why that can't work with singles, you know, in a way, too.
I've had experiences with my parents are in church, where they have the same thing program where you have a couple or a family that is designated another couple of a family or an individual. And although you may not become buddy buddies with these people, it's a start. I mean, it's a good way. At least they have a person they can say, okay, well, they're my designated friend. You know, and you can ask them questions. And from there you can, it's like a little security blanket in a way. You have this beginning, and then you can ask questions, and you feel more free to
to look around, because you do have that little blanket.
I guess the initial process that we went through was just more or less to be there and listen to their needs, and from that point on, say what our particular church had to offer for their particular needs, and that's about what our position was to with this couple. It seemed to work all right, I think, but I haven't heard that it's been carried on since our particular situation.
I don't know how many people actually, you know, it takes quite an effort for the person to keep, you know, it's very awkward. And you have to stay with it a while. And I don't know how many, do you know if anyone else much? I don't know how many, you know, we had a group of maybe 50 people that were going to do this. I admit I haven't really heard how successful others have been, but in our case it was worked out quite
well. Rita,
do you have any? I'm on a committee right now at our church. They're starting what's called a shepherding program, and that's what they're trying to do, is reach out to new people coming in, new members joining the church and whatnot. And we're supposed to come back the end of August with 10 names of our friends or people we know that we think would help, you know, the shepherding program. And what they would do is, whether it's a single family, a single person, whatever, these people would, you know, introduce them to friends and other people in the church, invite them over to, like, our house for dinner, invite them out to dinner, or they're going to have a few dinners and whatnot where you go, and all the new people plus the shepherding families will go and get to know each other like that. And now that's a new program that's supposed to start about September, October, when the, you know,
it's going to include singles, obviously.
Right. And so far, it's just in the committee stage, and it seems to be working out really well, and we're really working on it. But I think it needs a lot of prayers too, and people, you know, coming in and really being willing to help. I know it's it is hard sometimes to reach out. We have, my husband and I had some friends and whatnot just in the last few years that have been singles and whatnot, that have never been married or something or before or whatnot. And, you know, we started thinking, well, you know, we've got to invite them over to our house and include them like they are part of our family. And it has really been neat. Our kids have gotten to really like these people, and it's like they really are a part of our family. And I think I'm getting a lot of support from some of them, more so than from even friends that were family friends, you know, and whatnot. Now, because they feel like they are a part of our family. I don't know exactly how to say it.
I got you. Sounds clear enough to me. It's interesting to me that this is, there's a lot of intense feeling about this. A lot of intense feeling. Yeah.
You know, I think an important part of my experience in the last year has been those who have been divorced and have experienced similar things to mine have known exactly how I felt, have even perceived it when I have said nothing. I mean, they read me like a book. I can walk out the stairs and they just know. Where a lot of my married friends have had answers, you know. I mean, they know the answer to every problem. And they mean well. They just don't know. And so I think those who are in it are the ones who are going to have to be the basic circle of support. I think, you know, the widows to the widows, really. The divorce to the divorce, even though I realize you share a lot in common, and I'm not trying to say this has to be exclusive, but I think there has to be a lot of leadership if a church is going to take on a ministry to the singles, from the singles.
The singles, now there's the point. Because I think it's going to have to reach a point where we are allowed to address
the congregation. And we have to say things like, hey, don't play games. Let's identify the games. Single women in the church are a threat. Don't let the pastor's wife walk up to a woman who's never been married but who's taught in the elementary school for years, for example, and tell her that she does not understand children because she's not had children of her own. Oh, no more games. Don't start an organization and call it Carers and Spares.
There are lots of different models, and you're talking about programming things.
Yeah.
And the ones I've seen that are basically social are flops.
Exactly.
The ones that are more topical, educational, and spiritual,
good.
Are a whole lot healthier.
Mm-hmm. Wait, could you tell us about something that you've seen work?
You mean like?
Yeah, can you give us a for instance?
I think in some ways it's less threatening. You're not advertising that you have no one to go to a movie with or whatever that activity is.
Anybody can go to a Bible study, but
exactly,
to a dance
exactly.
Is a little more. Yeah.
Right. Plus, it's often going to hit a need that you really are interested in. Mm-hmm. And when you share that in common, that's a whole better starting point than a potluck.
A joint project of some kind.
Mm-hmm. Interest groups.
The lady behind you.
Well, I think this setting here has been very helpful to me, and how quickly we forget. I had quite a few lonely single years before I married, and I felt very much appreciated. I very much appreciated when a family invited me over, and yet I think how much have I done of that since I've been married, and I appreciate this awareness that I'm receiving tonight, and I will try to change now.
I think it also goes for single people to invite couples over.
Yeah, it would be a shock. Yeah, a surprise.
But the only thing is, in being a part of this group and knowing some other women, that's hard. You work all day. You bring your work home with you, or you're divorced and you've got kids. Hey, that's tough. That's really hard.
Kind of fun sometimes, too.
Boy, if you can physically manage it, it is. But boy, that's hard. Mm-hmm.
You have to know that you have to do things.
And expensive, yes. And expensive.
Yeah, it's expensive. That's true.
I didn't say you had to do it every day.
It's just one thing that wasn't mentioned that I have noticed. My father passed away 3 months ago, and my mother has gone through some very, very difficult times. They were very, very close, and I noticed that people came to the visitation, people came to the funeral home, and you know, and things like this. But now she's really, really needing. Now everything has become real to her. He's really gone. She's really alone. She really cannot force herself to do things alone that they did together. She doesn't want to do anything that they did together all their life. She doesn't want to go to the retired people's organization. She simply does not feel capable of going alone, and she really needs friendships and really needs company and just people calling and people stopping and people, I think, you know, at the time were there, but now kind of have assumed, I guess, that she's all right, or it slipped their mind, or they're busy. But it isn't just that week that people need somebody,
yeah.
And often later is even harder, and they really need it more then. And I personally have felt that I would like to see the pastor, whoever, the church, continue to remember them and think of them and contact them.
Have you told her or him, your pastor?
As a matter of fact, I told the pastor, okay. And he didn't do anything.
Well,
and,
tell him again.
Yeah.
You know, I want to say, and the lady here in the back made a point that I'd really like to underscore, and maybe from the standpoint of someone who's married and has a busy home and we have kids and all that stuff, it's very, very important that if you have needs, that you present them. If you as a single person for any reason allow yourself, you know, to sit up in your room, or if you allow yourself to get hurt and wish like the Dickens that someone would include you or that you could do this, the healthiest thing in the world would be to go to someone and say that and say, hey, I really need some friendship. And I know, and I'm quite sure it's true of Judy too, that we would respond very warmly to that. Here's somebody who's saying, I think I could get something for you. I'd be complimented, you know, by that. I'd say, oh, you think we have something to contribute? You know, this chaos in our house would interest you? you know, I would say you're welcome to it. The point is that I think there is a danger of divorced people, probably especially, to some extent. I think we talked about that in a group of widows and widowers this week, too bad you weren't here a little earlier, of feeling, and maybe least so of singles who've always been single, but to some extent there too, that there is something about that category that isn't totally adequate. And so we sort of have it's not quite a disease, but it's a category of unacceptability, so we have no right to ask anything of anyone. And I would be very surprised if you asked forthrightly for the things that you need from people that you consider to be reasonably sane and loving. I'd be very surprised if you didn't get anything in response. And that's the way it works, you know. You gotta present your human need before someone can respond. That's the other side of that.
I wonder if former friends, I noticed Rita was saying that some of the couple friends they'd had, you know, weren't as supportive as some other people now. At the time I was facing that, when I began to do what you just said, and when I began reaching out and saying, hey, you know, I really need you, people just came. I have never before or since experienced the Christian love I did at that time. I don't know how to say that, but it was just overwhelming. And it was so often from almost strangers. It was from the man in the gas station. It was from the dentist.
Yes.
It was the strangest thing. I was having a tooth filled, and I don't know. The dentist perceived some of my feelings, and he asked me about them. And the next thing I knew, I had a full-time job in the dentist office. Mm-hmm. And it was all done through Christian love. It really was. It was beautiful. But those friends I'd had before were not the ones I could go to as well. And maybe that was my problem. You know, I'm not sure. But yes, you're right. Because when you're in that situation, just let somebody know some way. I mean, it doesn't take a lot. And I found people more than willing to be.
You do them a favor. You know, they know how they can win with you. You give them a card. You know, to win. I can win if you tell me what you want me to do.
My mother lost, my dad died at the same time that I was divorced. Yeah. And she was in New York, I was in Minnesota, so we couldn't really do a lot of helping each other. But she found the same thing true. As she reached out and let people know, then they helped her.
The lady behind you hasn't spoken.
We have a divorced friend too, who this spring has found a friend who happens to be a female, and the four of us have spent a lot of time as couples with him this spring. And it was interesting, early this summer he made the statement to us. He said, hey, you know, I don't always have to do things with you along with Sue. you know, he said, I really would like to be included in the things that you're doing, just me, you know. And that just really hit me because it made me so aware of where his needs were. And it was really neat that he felt free to say that. And I really respected him for that, you know. And since then, we have done things with just him. It was good that he could do that.
Holly, I think you had your hand.
Well, I wanted to say that from my own experience, something to remember is not just to let people know what our needs are, but what we have to offer. And here at Holden, I think it's clearer than anything. I'm learning lots of lessons here, and I love it. And it's gotten so clear because this is basically a community of people who want to love, okay, whether we succeed or fail is something else, but at least that undergirds everything that we want to. And I have sensed this, I'm sure everybody here that's single has had this sense of feeling like everybody else out there has a good friend or a bunch of good friends or is part of a clique or a group, and I'm the only one left out. And then I started looking around and I realized that there's hardly any really close friendships here because of the transitoriness. There are people that look like close friends, and then I think, oh, there's a lot of people I hug too, and people watching us might well think that we've known each other for weeks even.
What are you doing? What are you doing, Holly?
But the thing that I have discovered that's important, and it has to do with letting our, being able to show our needs, is I walk around and everybody I look at, I know that they have some needs. They need friendship, they need acceptance, they need love. And on my worst days, I have found that if I just turn to somebody, anybody, I don't have to look for somebody who looks pitiful, just anybody, and try to do something positive, you know, make a point of talking to somebody, even if I'm kind of down myself. Every time the response has been really positive and really good, but a side effect of that, besides the fact that there's these good interactions from my side, is that it's kept me more willing to be vulnerable and to then tell other people my needs if they aren't being met, as usually they are, because there are a lot of people ready to pat you on your shoulder when they walk by or take your dish team for you, whatever. That kind of thing just flows. But there are sometimes that's not quite enough, or it's not at the right time, or it's not from the right person. And because I know I'm willing to give and it feels good to give, then I am willing to ask. And once you ask, as you say, the response is almost overwhelming.
Okay, I want to say that it's 10, and I don't want to hold anybody here. Doesn't, on the other hand, I don't want to kick you out. If you want to keep going, it's okay with me. Yeah.
Well, I want to make one slightly defensive statement on the part of married couples who know people who are divorcing or separated or divorced. From the standpoint of having been in the situation myself and known people who've been in it, it is sometimes awkward for married couples who have been the friends of a couple that is separating or divorcing to interact with one or another of the parties in the divorced couple for fear of taking sides. Yeah. Not wanting to take sides, I think you mentioned something about taking sides, and I think there's, but sometimes what might be perceived as standoffishness or rejection, saying, well, now you can't be our friend anymore because of your new single state, could possibly be, I'm not saying in anybody's case that I know it to be true, but might be a result of uncomfortableness with wanting not to take sides, especially if both parties, you know, in a divorce or separation. We're not going to say the wrong thing to one spouse, ex-spouse, or the other. I've experienced that confusion personally myself, and sort of kind of withdrawn from the whole situation for fear of messing it up, perhaps even more from one or the other.
I was just going to say that it seems like in cases of separation and divorce, widow, that there's a change in the relationship between all the people, not just the couple, but the couple and their friends and their relationship to each other. Mm-hmm. And when there's a change like that, people don't know how to react, and they get a little nervous and they get a little scared. And so it's easier to either pretend it's the same, which it isn't, or just disappear for a while. And what I think is real important is to say out loud, things aren't quite the same, but I still think that this relationship's important and valuable to me, and so I want to work at it. so that we can be friends now in our changed state.
Probably be a great relief if the friends who backed off and you would have come up and said, hey, I'm really feeling uncomfortable because I don't know what's going on.
Some good. It wasn't, when you said what you were asking, what I would have liked to have had, when I said support. And that can be just coming up and giving a hug. Yeah. And not all of them took sides or whatever. And so I wasn't just trying to get into that alone. But I think my support, I was working at the church when I started the separation, and there was a woman in her 80s who, on Sunday mornings, would give me two hugs because she said, I just think you need more than one today. things like that, the support that I'm talking to.
Yeah.
And that's really important.
Okay.
I was just going to say, too, we need to show more love to people who maybe they look sad, you don't know why they look sad, but go up and just say hello or something to them, show your love to them. I think we as Christians should do more of that, and then we all fail. We're all afraid, maybe we're the first step. I wanted to go on and come up with this lady over in the village center. She's sitting there all
Rita, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't, and I'm sorry I didn't. I wish I had now.
There's also always the question of whether you're going to intrude.
Usually that's not right. I mean, usually you're wrong about that. Usually intrusion is the lesser of two evils.
Yeah.
But I think that's how everybody feels, or you feel you might be rejected.
Well, now that could be a risk.
Yeah.
I would recommend to everyone here the Joan Holt tapes on singles. And
yes, I know Joan. She's a friend of mine. From Holden and back to Maryland. And she's really good on the subject.
Yes.
The man in the back had his hand. Didn't
just wondering about, there is a minority, I think within this group, there is single men available in this world that
haven't
seen.
You're excluding yourself, right?
Yeah. He better.
Okay, ladies, you heard that?
I think